Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity this week as Jim is on vacation. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Ian, it was primary day in a couple of states on Tuesday. A lot of congressional races in New York. The big one on the conservative side, though, was the Colorado Senate primary. And we've got a big upset, and it's a great upset. Daryl Glenn, who is a county commissioner out there, not usually the springboard to a U.S. Senate bid, but in this crowded field to take on Democrat Michael Bennett, Glenn, with very little money, did get what he needed most. Big endorsements and groundswell right before the primary on Tuesday. Ted Cruz came in and gave an enthusiastic endorsement. Sarah Palin did the same. There were others who came in and decided that this is the guy who would be the most conservative choice for Colorado Republicans to nominate. Glenn wins the nomination by double digits. He is now probably an underdog. He certainly is financially against Michael Bennett. Some folks in the more moderate parts of the Republican Party are going to say, well, this is deja vu. We had a chance to beat this guy 6 years ago. We nominated the most conservative option, Ken Buck. He lost. We got 6 more years of Michael Bennett. Will this time be any different? So, Ian, the good news is that if we can win this race, it looks like we've got another rock-solid conservative. And hopefully between now and Election Day, Glenn can actually come out on top in what is at best many times a purple state.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very good news. The race was an odd one, in part because most of the people with, to put it crudely, the credentials really to run and the name recognition to run opted out of the race. And so you had a number of people in there who really didn't have any name recognition, especially across the state. And when voters went to the polls yesterday, they had a 5-way contest. What's really extraordinary is that Daryl Glenn came out on top of that, as you pointed out, by a significant margin. Largely that was on because of endorsements. The Senate Conservatives Fund became sort of the first to jump behind him 3 months ago when he had $11,000 in the bank. I mean, he had about as much money as I think the Trump campaign has right now. So it was a signal to a lot of political observers when SCF jumped behind him that this was someone to watch. And then, of course, Cruz and Lee and Sass, and as you rightly note. So it's an exciting moment that it's the person that a lot of these strong conservative voices within the party backed won the nomination and will face Michael Bennett. And if he can win, and there's a good chance being a purple state, then it would be one of the two seats that Republicans could potentially flip this year. So if he could do that, that would be a great win in a year that otherwise has a very, very difficult map for Republicans in the Senate.
If only he could get some help at the top of the ticket. I don't know what the latest Colorado poll numbers are.
It would help.
But I don't get the sense that he's winning bigly there, because otherwise we'd probably know about it. On to the bad martini now, and this is a story that goes back a ways. This is updated scandal week, I guess, on Capitol Hill and in Washington. We got the final Benghazi report yesterday. Today, your colleague, Eliana Johnson, the Washington Bureau Chief for National Review, has more on the IRS scandal. She says it is likely the largest unauthorized disclosure of tax return information in history. The transfer of some 1.25 million pages of confidential tax returns from the IRS to the Department of Justice in October of 2010. And it was almost certainly illegal. She says what we know now, thanks to additional documents unearthed in years-long litigation by the good government group Cause of Action, is that Lois Lerner, who is in charge of the nonprofits at that time requesting tax-exempt status, is that Lerner almost certainly broke the law when she transferred the documents to the Justice Department. That casts a new light on the Justice Department's decision last year not to prosecute Lerner, who, of course, became the face of the scandal. The quote from Dan Epstein at Cause of Action says, "It took an organization over 50 months of investigation and multiple lawsuits to get clarity on the IRS's own compliance with the rules it enforces against others. The IRS, in the midst of its political targeting of groups engaged in policy advocacy, was engaging in the disclosure of millions of records aimed at ginning up prosecutions of these groups without going through the legally required channels. Federal law prohibits the IRS from sharing tax returns filed with the agency, with very limited exceptions. The DOJ has to formally request them, which didn't happen in any of these cases." So, Ian, shockingly, the IRS couldn't figure out its own rules here, and something's telling me the Justice Department isn't about to reopen the opportunity to prosecute Lois Lerner.
Exactly right. So what you have here is really Eliana doing the yeoman's work of fleshing out the details on what happened. And you have effectively what we surmised years and years ago, which is that the law, in fact, was broken and that prosecution is, in fact, merited and et cetera, et cetera. And there are two, I think, main points here. First of all, is the ostensible or apparent collusion between the IRS and the DOJ sort of scratching one another's backs in the sense of Lerner transfers these documents to the DOJ in the hopes that they could figure out a scheme under which to prosecute the groups in question, which is radically unseemly. And then when this is discovered, the DOJ, which has discretion to conduct the prosecution, declines. So this is just so sort of perfectly sums up the back-scratching interagency that seems to characterize the Obama administration. Secondly, it really is astonishing, and it's a true sort of indictment of the procedures of transparency in the federal government, particularly under this administration, that we're only learning 6 years after the criminal activity happened that it was, in fact, criminal. I mean, the Obama administration, of course, has stonewalled, and Lerner famously took the Fifth. And we're only now getting to the point where the House Government Oversight Committee is looking at impeaching John Koskinen and the IRS commissioner. Given what we knew when this broke in 2012, I believe, we had ample grounds for action then, and 6 years on, we're still piecing together the details. That really is sort of an astonishing and disheartening fact in all of this.
With both scandals, you got Benghazi, you got the IRS, and of course there have been more in the Obama administration. It's fun to watch, although infuriating at the same time, to watch the pattern of how the left handles this. First, there's the denial. Then there's we have to wait to get all the facts out. And then once all the facts are out, we've covered all this. This is old news. There's nothing here. Can't we just move on?
And Republicans have spent countless hours and millions of taxpayer dollars investigating this non-scandal. They could have cinched it up in considerably less time and at less expense if Democrats would simply play along.
Yes. It's entirely politics, this scandal especially, which the Democrats were outraged at for, I believe, exactly one hearing, maybe two at the most. But all of a sudden, it was just a political witch hunt. All right. On to martini number three. And Ian, when Jim and I developed the crazy martini, we didn't specifically have this story in mind, but I can't think of a story that is better suited for the crazy martini than this one. This is from Philly.com, although it takes place across the river in New Jersey. On June 16th, police were called to an unlikely scene, an end-of-the-year class party at the William P. Tatum Elementary School in Collingswood. A third grader had made a comment about the brownies being served to the class. After another student exclaimed that the remark was racist, the school called the Collingswood Police Department, according to the mother of the boy who made the comment. The police officer spoke to the student, who is nine, according to the boy's mother and local authorities. He said they were talking about brownies. Who exactly did he defend? Mrs. Dos Santos said. The boy's father was contacted by Collingswood police later in the day. Police said the incident had been referred to the New Jersey Division of Child Protection and Permanency. The student stayed home for his last day of third grade. The mom says her son was traumatized, and not surprisingly, she hopes to send him to a different public school in the fall. But listen to this. The incident has sparked outrage among some parents and was one of several in the last month when Collingswood police have been called to look into school incidents that parents think hardly merit criminal investigation. Superintendent Scott Oswald estimated that on some occasions over the last month, officers may have been called to as many as five incidents per day in the district of 1,875 students. The increased police involvement follows a May 25th meeting among the Collingswood Police Department, school officials, and representatives from the Camden County Prosecutor's Office, where school officials and police both said they were told to report to police any incidents that could be considered criminal, including what Police Chief Kevin Carey called anything as minor as simple name-calling incidents that the school would typically handle internally. The police and schools were also advised that they should report just about every incident to the New Jersey Division of Child Protection and Permanency. Ian, this is the type of story where you just want to grab government by the collar and smack it against the wall because the insanity, the lack of common sense, this is just kids being kids. If you're going to prosecute name-calling, the court logs are going to be jammed from coast to coast.
Greg, this isn't the crazy martini. This is the absolutely freaking insane martini. I mean, this is just unbelievable. Not only that this happened, but that it's official policy for this to happen. I mean, here's the situation in the United States circa 2016. The local police are being called in to investigate name calling among 9-year-olds. Meanwhile, police are not allowed to participate in rape investigations on college campuses. That has to be handled by the school. Have we completely lost our minds?
Yes.
This is unbelievable. And I was given the particular offense here, referring to this particular baked good. I'm fearful of there will be no foods left that the elementary schoolers will be able to refer to. We can't talk about blackberries, black beans, black cherries, black olives. I'm sure yellow peppers is going to be offensive. And you can't talk about oranges because that's offensive to Snooki. So, I mean, I don't really know what's left. It truly is the tyranny of the idiocracy.
The teachers have to hate this, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, gotta do a formal thing every time some kid calls a kid a name. I mean, there would be nothing else would get done all day.
There must be a hotline or something, or else there are just emergency dispatch operators that are wildly confused as they get calls from, you know, James Polk Elementary about the latest incident of buttheadism.
Do you think this goes to parents who complain every time their kid has not a perfect day at school, and so the school district feels that it's got to respond to all these things? I have no idea why the prosecutor's office and the police would ever agree to this arrangement. This seems like the most colossal waste of time. But do you think it's the complaining parents that have just only accelerated over the years that are really triggering all this, even though it's other parents now that are feeling the brunt of it?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. It's also just the increased legalization, if you will, of our society. I mean, everything needs a law, everything needs a rule, everything needs a regulation. I'm not that old, but back in the day when I was in school, if you called a kid a name, the teacher said, "Don't do that. That's mean." And you, being a 9-year-old, were properly cowed because this was your teacher who you respected and whom you obeyed. And I think that increasingly that just that sort of structure of communal familiar relations, those sort of natural conventions that we respect, have broken down. And to fill that vacuum, we've opted to replace it with rules and regulations. And so teachers we no longer trust to be sort of the authorities to say, "Hey, cut that out." Now we outsource it to the local PD. It's an enormous problem.
Two more depressing things I just thought of. Number one, this shows that local government in some cases is no better than state or federal government. They're just as insane.
Absolutely.
And just as oppressive in these sorts of things. Secondly, do you think some of the crazies at the University of Missouri and elsewhere are thinking, "Man, why didn't we think of this? Why didn't we go to the cafeteria and stage protests over baked goods and other things?"
There's a famous video. I think you can still find it on YouTube. It's sort of the original James O'Keefe gotcha video. And he was proving a point. He got the dean at Rutgers to remove Lucky Charms,
yes,
from the cafeteria because he protested that it was offensive to Irish people. 10 years ago, that was a joke. Now, I'm sure that this elementary school would happily cow to that demand as well.
People, show some real spine and leadership. In the meantime, I'm going to go have lunch and chew my sandwich into the shape of a gun. Ian, have a great day.
You as well.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.